And we're on mantra number 13 on page 91. Anyareva hu sambhavat, anyadahura sambhavat, iti shushumatiranam yenas tat vichachakshire. Anyat, different. Eva, certainly. Ahu, it is said. Sambhavat, by worshipping the Supreme Lord, the cause of all causes. This is page 91. Yeah. Anyat, different. Ahu, it is said. Asambhavat, by worshipping what is not supreme. Iti, thus, shushruma, I heard it. Dhiranam, from the undisturbed authorities. Yea, who, na, unto us. Tut, about that subject matter. Vichachakshire, perfectly explained. Translation. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and then another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. Purport. The system of hearing from undisturbed authorities is approved in this mantra. Unless one hears from bona fide acharya, who is never disturbed by the changes of the material world, one cannot have the real key to transcendental knowledge. The bona fide spiritual master who has also heard the Shruti mantras or Vedic knowledge from his undisturbed acharya never presents anything that is not mentioned in the Vedic literature. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.25, it is clearly said that those who worship the Pitris, or forefathers, attain the planets of the forefathers. That the gross materialists who make plans to remain here stay in this world, and that the devotees of the Lord who worship none but Lord Krishna, the supreme cause of all causes, reach him in the spiritual sky. Here also in Sri Ashapanasad, it is verified that one achieves different results by different modes of worship. If we worship the Supreme Lord, we will certainly reach him in his eternal abode. And if we worship demigods like the sun god or moon god, we can reach their respective planets without a doubt. And if we wish to remain on this wretched planet with our planning commissions and our stopgap political adjustments, we can certainly do that also. Nowhere in authentic scriptures is it said that one will ultimately reach the same goal by doing anything or worshiping anyone. Such foolish theories are offered by self-made spiritual masters who have no connection with the parampara, the bona fide system of disciplic succession. The bona fide spiritual master cannot say that all paths lead to the same goal and that anyone can attain this goal by his own mode of worship of the demigods or of the supreme or whatever. Any common man can very easily understand that a person can reach his destination only when he has purchased a ticket for that destination. A person who has purchased a ticket for Calcutta can reach Calcutta, but not Bombay. But the so-called spiritual masters say that any and all paths will take one to the supreme goal. Such mundane and compromising offers attract many foolish creatures who become puffed up with their manufactured methods of spiritual realization. The Vedic injunctions, however, do not uphold them. Unless one has received knowledge from a bona fide spiritual master who is in the recognized line of disciplic succession, one cannot have the real thing as it is. Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita 4.2, Evam parampara praptam imam raja shayo viduhu sakalani hamahata yogo nashta parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. When Lord Sri Krishna was present on this earth, the bhakti yoga principles defined in the Bhagavad Gita had become distorted. Therefore, the Lord had to reestablish the disciplic system, beginning with Arjuna, who was the most confidential friend and devotee of the Lord. The Lord clearly told Arjuna in 4.3 Bhagavad Gita that it was because Arjuna was his devotee and friend that he should understand the principles of the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, only the Lord's devotee and friend can understand the Gita. This also means that only one who follows the path of Arjuna can understand the Bhagavad Gita. At the present moment, there are many interpreters and translators of this sublime dialogue who care nothing for Lord Krishna or Arjuna. Such interpreters explain the verses of the Bhagavad Gita in their own way and postulate all sorts of rubbish in the name of the Gita. Such interpreters believe neither in Sri Krishna nor in his eternal abode. How then can they explain the Bhagavad Gita? Krishna clearly says that only those who have lost their sense worship the demigods for paltry rewards, Bhagavad Gita 7:20 and 23. Ultimately, he advises that one give up all other ways and modes of worship and fully surrender unto him, Bhagavad Gita 18:66. Only those who are cleansed of all sinful reactions can have such unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord. Others will continue hovering on the material platform with their paltry ways of worship and thus be misled from the real path under the false impression that all paths lead to the same goal. In this mantra of Sri Ishapanishad, the word sambhavat, by worship of the Supreme Cause, in this mantra of Sri Ishapanishad, the word sambhavat, by worship of the Supreme Cause, is very significant. Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and everything that exists has emanated from him. In the Bhagavad Gita 10:8, the Lord says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Here is a correct description of the Supreme Lord given by the Lord himself. The words sarvasya prabhava indicate that Krishna is the creator of everyone, including Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And because these three principal deities of the material world are created by the Lord is the creator of all that exists in the material and spiritual worlds. In the Atharva Veda, Gopal Tapani Upanishad 1:24, it is similarly said, He who existed before the creation of Brahma and who enlightened Brahma with Vedic knowledge is Lord Sri Krishna. Similarly, the Narayan Upanishad 1 states, Then the Supreme Person, Narayan, desired to create all living beings. Thus from Narayan, Brahma was born. Narayan created all the Prajapatis. Narayan created Indra. Narayan created the 8 Vasus. Narayan created the 11 Rudras. Narayan created the 12 Adityas. Since Narayan is a plenary manifestation of Lord Krishna, Narayan and Krishna are one and the same. The Narayana Upanishad, Narayana Upanishad 4 also states, Devaki's son Krishna is the Supreme Lord. The identity of Narayan with the Supreme Cause has also been accepted and confirmed by Sripad Shankaracharya, even though Shankar does not belong to the Vaishnav or personalist cult. The Atharva Veda, Maha Upanishad 1, also states, Only Narayan existed in the beginning, when neither Brahma, nor Shiva, nor fire, nor water, nor stars, nor sun, nor moon existed. The Lord does not remain alone, but creates as he desires. Krishna himself states in the Moksha Dharma, I created the Prajapatis and the Rudras. They do not have complete knowledge of me because they are covered by my illusory energy. It is also stated in the Varaha Purana, Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and from him the four-headed Brahma was manifested, as well as Rudra, who later became omniscient. Thus, all Vedic literature confirms that Narayan, or Krishna, is the cause of all causes. In the Brahma Samhita 5.1 also it is said that the Supreme Lord is Sri Krishna, Govinda, the delighter of every living being, and the primeval cause of all causes. The really learned persons know this from evidence given by the great sages in the Vedas, and thus they decide to worship Lord Krishna as all in all. Such persons are called Buddha, or really learned, because they worship only Krishna. The conviction that Krishna is the all in all is established when one hears the transcendental message from the undisturbed Acharya with faith and love. One who has no faith in or love for Lord Krishna cannot be convinced of this simple truth. Those who are faithless are described in the Bhagavad Gita 9:11 as mudhas, fools or asses. It is said that the mudhas deride the personality of Godhead because they do not have complete knowledge from the undisturbed Acharya. One who is disturbed by the whirlpool of material energy is not qualified to become an Acharya. Before hearing the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was disturbed by the material whirlpool, by his affection for his family, society, and community. Thus, Arjuna wanted to become a philanthropist, a philanthropic, nonviolent man of the world. But when he became Buddha, by hearing the Vedic knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita from the Supreme Person, he changed his decision and became a worshipper of Lord Sri Krishna, who had himself arranged the Battle of Kurukshetra. Arjuna worshipped the Lord by fighting with his so-called relatives, and in this way he became a pure devotee of the Lord. Such accomplishments are possible only when one worships the real Krishna and not some fabricated Krishna invented by foolish men who are without knowledge of the intricacies of the science of Krishna described in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. According to the Vedanta Sutra, Sambhuta is the source of birth and sustenance, as well as the reservoir that remains after annihilation, janmadyasayataha. The Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the same author, maintains that the source of all emanations is not like a dead stone, but is abhijna, or fully conscious. The primeval Lord Sri Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita 7:26 that he is fully conscious of past, present, and future, and that no one, including demigods such as Shiva and Brahma, knows him fully. Certainly half-educated spiritual leaders who are disturbed by the tides of material existence cannot know him fully. They try to make some compromise by making the mass of humanity the object of worship, but they do not know that such worship is only a myth because the masses are imperfect. The attempt by these so-called spiritual leaders is something like pouring water on the leaves of a tree instead of the root. The natural process is to pour water on the root, but such disturbed leaders are more attracted to the leaves than the root. Despite their perpetually watering the leaves, however, everything dries up for want of nourishment. Sri Ashapanishad advises us to pour water on the root, the source of all germination. Worship of the mass of humanity by rendering bodily service, which can never be perfect, is less important than service to the soul. The soul is the root that generates different types of bodies according to the law of karma. To serve human beings by medical aid, social help, and educational facilities, while at the same time cutting the throats of poor animals in slaughterhouses, is no service at all to the soul, the living being. The living being is perpetually suffering in different types of bodies from the material miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death. The human form of life offers one a chance to get out of this entanglement simply by reestablishing the lost relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. The Lord comes personally to teach his philosophy or surrender unto the Supreme, the Sambhuta. Real service to humanity is rendered when one teaches surrender to and worship of the Supreme Lord with full love and energy. That is the instruction of Sri Ashapanishad in this mantra. The simple way to worship the Supreme Lord in this age of disturbance is to hear and chant about his great activities. The mental speculators, however, think that the activities of the Lord are imaginary. Therefore, they refrain from hearing of them and invent some word jugglery without any substance to divert the attention of the innocent masses of people. Instead of hearing of the activities of Lord Krishna, such pseudo-spiritual masters advertise themselves by inducing their followers to sing about them. In modern times, the number of such pretenders has increased considerably, and it has become a problem for the pure devotees of the Lord to save the masses of people from the unholy propaganda of these pretenders and pseudo-incarnations. The Upanishads indirectly draw our attention to the primeval Lord Sri Krishna, but the Bhagavad Gita, which is the summary of all the Upanishads, directly points to Sri Krishna. Therefore, one should hear about Krishna as he is hearing from the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, and in this way one's mind will gradually be cleansed of all contaminated things. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:17 says, "By hearing of the activities of the Lord, the devotee draws the attention of the Lord. Thus the Lord, being situated in the heart of every living being, helps the devotee by giving him proper directions." The Bhagavad Gita 10:10 confirms this. "Dadami bhuti yogam tam yenamam upayanti te." The Lord's inner direction cleanses the devotee's heart of all contamination produced by the material modes of passion and ignorance. Non-devotees are under the sway of passion and ignorance. One who is in passion cannot become detached from material hankering, and one who is in ignorance cannot know what he is or what the Lord is. Thus, when one is in passion or ignorance, there is no chance for self-realization, however much one may play the part of a religionist. For a devotee, the modes of passion and ignorance are removed by the grace of the Lord. In this way, the devotee becomes situated in the quality of goodness, the sign of a perfect brahmana. Anyone can qualify as a brahman if he follows the path of devotional service under the guide of a bona fide spiritual master. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18 also says, Kirata hunandra pulinda pulkasha abhira shumba yavana kasaraya yene cha papa yadapashraya shraya shudyanti tasmai pravavishnave namaha. Any low-born person can be purified by the guidance of a pure devotee of the Lord, for the Lord is extraordinarily powerful. When one attains brahminical qualifications, he becomes happy and enthusiastic to render devotional service to the Lord. Automatically, the science of God is unveiled before him. By knowing the science of God, one gradually becomes freed from material attachments, and one's doubtful mind becomes crystal clear by the grace of the Lord. One who attains this stage is a liberated soul and can see the Lord in every step of life. This is the perfection of Sambhava, as described in this mantra of Sri Ishopanishad. Sri Ishopanishad, we just finished the verse, Anyad Evahur Sambhavad, Anyad Ahura Sambhavad, Iti Shushrumati Ranam Yenas Tad Vichichakshire. And it says that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and then a different result is obtained by worshipping that which is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. So there's a few very important concepts in the verse, in the purport. And one of them is to hear from the proper source. And who can say what that is? Mahajana? So hear from a Mahajan. And what's, according to this verse in the purport, the quality of a Mahajana? Understood? Okay. Undisturbed, yeah. Okay, so undisturbed means dhira, right? So an undisturbed person means that if somebody's being, if somebody who's moved by the external world, by the external senses, such a person's not qualified to transmit transcendental knowledge because he or she is under the control of the modes of material nature. Let's talk about that a little bit from the Bhagavad Gita. Is there a possibility that we can clear the runway? Otherwise, we'll just be dhira. Are they going into practice pretty soon? Or this? So what does it mean to be dhira anyway? Oh, right. Uh-huh. Okay. We got the microphones. Let's get them moving around. So undisturbed in success or failure?
Don't get distracted by the success or failure.
Okay.
And still stay focused on the ultimate goal.
Is that somewhere in Bhagavad Gita? Yes, it is. Do you know where, though? Hare Krishna. Well, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma describes someone who's come to this level. Let's look at the section of Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. Do you know which chapter it's in? Chapter 18. There's a few verses leading up to that, which are important in understanding this idea of being undisturbed. So it's 1854, a Brahma Bhuta. But let's look at, starting at text number 49 on page 734. Asakta Bhuti Sarvatra Jitatma Vigatasprihā Naishkarmya Siddhim Paramam Sanyasin Arigachati. One who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain by practice of renunciation the highest perfect stage of freedom from renunciation. So here who here would like to know how to reach the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction? Raise your hand. You want to reach the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction? Please raise your hand if you'd like that. Okay, then let's hear how to do it. One who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain by practice of renunciation the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. Text 50. Siddhim prapto yatap brahma tatapnoti nibodame samasenaiva kaunteya nishta gyanasya para. O son of Kunti, learn from me how one who has achieved this perfection can attain to the supreme perfectional stage Brahman, the stage of highest knowledge, by acting in the way I shall now summarize. Buddhya vishutaya yukto drityatmanam niyamyacha shabdadin vishayam styaktva raga dvesho yudasyacha viviktasevi lagvashvi yatavakaya manasaha dhyana yoga paro nityam vairagyam samupashritaha. Anankaram balam dharpam kamam krodam parigraham vimucha nirmama shanto brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination. Giving up the object of sense gratification. Being free from attachment and hatred. One who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind, and power of speech, who is always in trance, and who is detached, free from false ego, false strength, false pride, lust, anger, and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship and peaceful, such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. Text 54. Brahma bhuta prasanatman nashochati nakankshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. About being dhira, also in the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, doesn't Krishna tell Arjuna something about that in his very beginning instructions? Something we could probably relate to on a warm day, right? And Sheetal knows it because your name means cool. About the seasons? Like, about Matrasparshasta Konteya, Shitoshna Sukatukada, Agama Paino, Nityas Tamstitikshash Vaparata, second chapter. It's about the 12th verse, is it? No, not 12, it's 14. In this verse, let's find it, Matrasparshasta Konteya. 14? Okay, 13, we'll go back. It mentions the word dhira. So on page 83 of the Gita, very important verses, these two. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. In text 14, O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O sign of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So, in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks a little bit about work and determination in different modes of nature. So, somebody who's a worker in the mode of goodness. Does anybody know what are some of the qualities of somebody who's working in the mode of goodness? Yeah, definitely somebody who's in the mode of goodness is happy. And there's a quality of work and determination in the mode of goodness. And what it means is somebody does their work out of duty because it ought to be performed. And somebody in the mode of goodness is not attached to the fruit of their work. They're not working for a result, in other words. So that means, that relates to this verse we're talking about, because if we, for instance, if it's a very hot day and our duty is to cook, then if you're in the mode of goodness, you go in and cook because it's your duty. And say if it's a really cold day, like in Vrindavan, it can get really cold in the wintertime. It gets biting cold because there's a little wind and sometimes there's moisture in the air. It just gets under your skin and there's no place to go to get warm. But still you have to wake up and take your bath early in the morning because it's your duty to take morning bath, right? So if you're in the mode of goodness, you do it out of duty because it ought to be performed. So it's cold in the morning, you go take your bath anyway. Or if it's hot in the kitchen, you go and you take your do your cooking and do your duty. This is the mode of goodness. Mode of passion? What about in the mode of passion? Determination. It wavers according to what's pleasing to the senses, right? It's hot. Well, I won't do it today. Do it some other time. It's too cold. I'll bathe next week. It's not convenient for me. And therefore, Krishna says, somebody who renounces in the mode of passion, it doesn't get the result. There's no good result that comes from that. Let's look at the chapter 18, because this is important about how to become dhira. It means to do your duty. So if you look on page 716, text 19, there's some very interesting verses. Let's share the reading so everyone can hear themselves read it also. And we'll start with Narhari Dev Prabhu. Do you have a mic? And let's read through some of these translations, starting with text 19.
According to the three modes, three different modes of material nature, there are three kinds of knowledge, action, and performer of action. Now hear of them from me.
Why don't you read three each?
That knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. That knowledge by which one sees that in every different body there is a different type of living entity, you should understand to be in the mode of passion.
Actually,
finish it.
Go back to page 708 and start on text number 7. You get three more.
Okay. Prescribed duties should never be renounced. If one gives up his prescribed duties because of illusion, such renunciation is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Anyone who gives up prescribed duties as troublesome or out of fear of bodily comfort is said to have renounced in the mode of passion. Such action never leads to the elevation of renunciation. O Arjuna, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done, and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness.
The intelligent renouncer situated in the mode of goodness, neither hateful of inauspicious work nor attached to auspicious work, has no doubts about work. It is indeed impossible for an embodied being to give up all activities, but he who renounces the fruits of action is called one who has truly renounced. For one who is not renounced, the threefold fruits of action, desirable, undesirable, and mixed, accrue after death. But those who are in renounced order of life have no such result of suffer or enjoy.
O mighty armed Arjuna, according to the Vedanta, there are five causes for the accomplishment of all action. Now learn of these from me. the place of action, the body, the performer, the various senses, the many different kind of endeavor, and ultimately the super soul. These are the five factors of action. Whatever right or wrong action a man performs by body, mind, or speech is caused by these five factors.
Therefore, one who thinks himself the only doer, not considering the five factors, is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in the world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions.
Knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower are the three factors that motivate action. The senses, the work, and the doer are the three constituents of action. Text 19. According to the three different modes of material nature, there are three kinds of knowledge, action, and performer of action. Now hear of them from me. That knowledge by which an undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness.
That knowledge by which one sees that in every different body there is a different type of living entity, you should understand to be in the mode of passion. And that knowledge by which one is attached to one kind of work as the all in all, without knowledge of the truth, and which is very meager, is said to be in the mode of darkness. That action which is regulated and which is performed without attachment, without love or hatred, and without desire for fruitive results, is said to be in the mode of goodness.
But action performed with great effort by one seeking to gratify his desires and enacted from a sense of false ego is called action in the mode of passion. And that knowledge by which...
Text 25.
That action performed in illusion, in disregard of scriptural injunctions, and without concern for future bondage or for violence or distress caused to others, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. One who performs his duty without association with modes of material nature, without false ego, with great determination and enthusiasm, and without wavering in success or failure, is said to be a worker in the mode of goodness.
The worker who is attached to work and the fruits of the work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious and impure, and moved by the joy and sorrow, is said to be the mode of passion. The workers who is always engaged in work against the injunction of the scriptures, who is materialistic, abstains, cheating and expert in insulting others, and who is lazy, always mourns and procrastinating, is said to be worker in the mode of ignorance. O winner of wealth, now please listen as I tell you in detail of the different kind of understanding and determination according to three modes of material nature.
O son of Pritha, the understanding by which one knows what ought to be done and what ought not to be done, what is to be feared and what is not to be feared, what is binding and what is liberating, is in the mode of goodness. O son of Pritha, that understanding which cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, is in the mode of passion. That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion, under the spell of illusion and darkness, and strives always in the wrong direction, O Pritha, is in the mode of ignorance.
O
person of Pratha, that determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained with steady fastness by yoga practice and which thus controls the activities of the mind, life and senses, is determination, the mode of goodness. But that determination by which one holds fast to fruitive results in religion, economic development and sense gratification is of the nature of passion, O Arjuna. And that determination which cannot go beyond dreaming, fearlessness, lamentation, moroseness and illusion, such an intelligent determination, O son of Pratha, is in the mode of darkness.
O best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys, and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects and which appears like nectar at first but poison at the end is said to be of the nature of passion.
And that happiness which is blind to the self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to the end, which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance. There is no being existing either here or among the demigods in the higher planetary system which is freed from these three modes born of material nature. Brahmanas, Kshatriya, Vaishyas and Shudras are distinguished by the qualities born of their own nature in accordance with the material modes, O chastiser of the enemy.
Okay, so we heard about different kinds of happiness, different kinds of workers, different kinds of determination. Anything else? According to the three modes of material nature. So is this helpful, hearing this? Yes. Yes, question. On 17?
Right. So what does this, whose intelligence is not entangled, what does that mean? So meaning the context is people today, like they get bound by duties. They work for, say, military or somebody works for a different organization. And so in that context, what does this sentence really means? Because people always have, people do not know what they're doing many times, especially if they're in positions like a military or somewhere, right?
Positions like what?
Like they are in a military, for example.
Yes.
Right. Uh-huh. And they may be running an unjust war, right? So what is this untangled?
One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. Let's read the purport. In this verse, the Lord informs Arjuna that the desire not to fight arises from false ego. Arjuna thought himself to be the doer of action, but he did not consider the supreme sanction within and without. If one does not know that a super sanction is there, why should he act? But one who knows the instruments of work, himself as the worker, and the Supreme Lord as the supreme sanctioner, is perfect in doing everything. Such a person is never an illusion. Personal activity and responsibility arise from the false ego and godlessness or lack of Krishna consciousness. Anyone who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Supersoul or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though killing, does not kill, nor is he under the command, nor is he ever affected by the reaction of such killing. When a soldier kills under the command of a superior officer, he is not subject to be judged. But if a soldier kills on his own personal account, then he is certainly judged by a court of law. It's a very important point because it goes to what we were also talking about in the Sri Upanishad, and that is how one becomes situated as a dhira. And partly that is one is situated under superior authority. So the simple example here, since you brought up the army, it also comes up in the purport, is that if you are under the command of, say, if you're a U.S. soldier and you go to a war and they tell you to go and kill somebody, if you kill somebody, you become a war hero. And if you just do it on your own, even if it's in battle practically, you kill somebody, then you can be persecuted for that, even condemned to death for that kind of killing. So obviously it has to be under authority. One has to act under authority. So a devotee of the Lord is always acting under the authority of the Lord. And this is his shelter. His intelligence doesn't become entangled in trying to decide and decipher what is the proper action. He knows what the proper action is by guru, sadhu, and shastra, and he acts accordingly, and not otherwise. Otherwise, Krishna says, bahu shakha hyanantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. Avyavisayinam means if one doesn't have this determination to follow the authority, then one's intelligence becomes many-branched and entangled, and he becomes responsible, actually, for his activities. However, if one is following the authority perfectly, he's no longer responsible for the actions. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana. Somebody whose intelligence is disciplined means he's following the instruction of shastra. He's following instruction of guru and of sadhu. Then his intelligence doesn't become entangled. How to achieve that? Krishna mentions at the very end of the Bhagavad Gita. Let's look at the... 73. No, further along. And text 71. Shadhavana nashuyascha shunuyadapi yo naraha. Sopi mukta shubha lokan prapnuyat punya karmanam. And one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains the auspicious planets where the pious dwell. Back up one. Text 70. Adveshyate chaya imam dharmyam sambhadam avyayo gyanam yagnin atenaham ishtasam iti me mati. And I declare that he who studies this sacred conversation of ours worships me by his intelligence. So, hearing Bhagavad Gita, if you every day you read Bhagavad Gita, hear what Krishna is saying, then your intelligence becomes unentangled. As an example, hearing about the three modes of material nature and the different kinds of determination, work, happiness. The intelligence becomes unentangled because the intelligence discriminates. Now, if your intelligence is purified and correctly guided by the words of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, then you'll understand how to act properly and how to avoid the pitfalls of the material world. For instance, if you see happiness in the mode of passion, you might then call on your good intelligence, your purified, unentangled intelligence. And remember, before you indulge in that kind of happiness, that, oh, this is like nectar in the beginning, but poison at the end. And therefore, you're guided properly to withdraw from that. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that one whose every action is devoid of desire for sense gratification is perfectly situated in knowledge. That means the intelligence is activated through hearing Bhagavad Gita. If you activate your intelligence through Bhagavad Gita. And what is Bhagavad Gita? What is it? It's coming from God. So is God speaking to you when you read Bhagavad Gita? Directly? Yes. So that's how you get your intelligence unentangled. You hear from God directly. You can't get any better than that. I mean, that's what we're distributing. We're passing this out in motel rooms and on the street corners and everywhere we can, because anybody who reads Bhagavad Gita is directly hearing from God. And if you don't believe it, try it yourself. Wake up every morning and sit down with the Bhagavad Gita for an hour and just hear. Just listen to what Krishna is saying, and your intelligence will become entangled. What did you say, Ashutosh? Sri Bhagavanuvacha. Yeah, Sri Bhagavanuvacha. Who's speaking? You'll actually develop a personal relationship with Krishna through the Bhagavad Gita. Personal. Why? He's also in your heart. He's also within the heart. Tesham satata yuktanam. I will read you a nice purport from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You're going to like this. Whoops. Uh-oh. Here Prabhupada gives, you know the verse I was just quoting? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. Krishna is saying that anyone who has love for him, who's worshiping him, Krishna, within his heart, he gives them intelligence exactly how to come to him. So he's there internally as the supersoul, externally he's there as the Shastra, and also as the spiritual master. He's personally manifest as the Shastra, and this is the spiritual master. Now here's a nice purport to this verse given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna, Hare Krishna. Tesham satata yuktanam. This is text number 49 for those of you who are keeping score in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila chapter 1. What is the name of the first chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita for 25 points? 25 points to Veda Vit. And we could split it with Narhari Dev Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. So Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, Volume 1, The Spiritual Masters, everything about Guru Tattva that you ever want to know is there in this chapter. If you read the whole chapter, you'll be enlightened in that way. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. I'll say the word and then please repeat. Tesham unto them satata yuktanam, always engaged. Bhajatam, in rendering devotional service. Priti purvakam, in loving ecstasy. Dadami, I give. Buddhi yogam, real intelligence. Tam, that. Yena, by which. Mam, unto me. Upayanti, come. Te, they. Translation, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Purport. This verse of the Bhagavad Gita 10.10 clearly states how Govinda Dev instructs his pure, bona fide devotees. The Lord declares that by enlightenment in theistic knowledge, he awards attachment for him to those who constantly engage in his transcendental loving service. This awakening of divine consciousness enthralls a devotee, who thus relishes his eternal transcendental mellow. Such an awakening is awarded only to those convinced by devotional service about the transcendental nature of the personality of Godhead. They know that the supreme truth, the all-spiritual and all-powerful person, is one without a second, and has fully transcendental senses. He is the fountainhead of all emanations. Such pure devotees, always merged in knowledge of Krishna and absorbed in Krishna consciousness, exchange thoughts and realizations as great scientists exchange their views and discuss the results of their research in scientific academies. Such exchanges of thoughts in regard to Krishna give pleasure to the Lord, who therefore favors such devotees with all enlightenment. Any comment? Let's just talk about it just a little bit. Anything you heard? You're smiling, so please pass her the microphone. Yeah. Just flip that switch up a little higher.
Sorry. So what just came to my mind was I heard in a lecture that the prayers that Lord Shiva gives to the Prachetas, in that in a verse where he explains how the Lord is, in one verse he says that the navel of the Lord is so deep that all the universes that came out of it, when they see it, they again want to go back. So when it was new to me. So when anything like this we hear from Bhagavatam, like how in one purport Prabhupada says, like because of mining the balance goes. So like that, it's true science in every purport and every verse that Prabhupada explains. Everything it's new to us, and the moment we start discussing, it's unending and it's truly scientific.
Nice point, very nice point, and. The sense in this purport about how devotees relish exchanging their realizations and different aspects of Shastra and bringing them out, just the way scientists or, you know, scholars, they get into these deep discussions about subtle nuances and philosophy and things like that and go on and on. And this is actually the process for self-realization, which is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how devotees come together and hear about the Lord and then they discuss. And it's pleasing to the Lord. Srinvatam swa kata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyan taksto hi badrani vidhunoti suritsatam. Lord Sri Krishna, who is the Paramatma, the super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So he relishes that the devotees are speaking about him, and he purifies the devotee from within the heart in that context, speaking about the Lord. So just by that activity of hearing and chanting and discussing about the Lord's activities, one becomes perfect. And this relates back to our Sri Upanishad verse about becoming dhira, because when one is hearing about the Lord and relishing the topics of the Lord and also simultaneously becoming purified by the Lord from within the heart of unwanted things, then one is no longer disturbed by the external changes of the material world, no longer attracted to the qualities of the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, becomes attracted instead by Krishna's qualities, which are nirguna. They're beyond the qualities of the material nature. And everyone can become attracted to that. That's brought out in the Atmarama verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's in the seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. And it's an explanation of the fact that Shukadeva Goswami, who was liberated from birth and went away from home right when he was born, was attracted back, even though he was a self-realized soul and completely satisfied in himself, to study the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the sages at Naimasaranya were asking Suta Goswami, how did that happen? That a completely self-realized soul, why did he take so much trouble to study such a vast literature? And the answer was, itam bhuta gunohari, that because of Krishna's quality, which is so attractive, and it's beyond the three modes of material nature, when he heard it, even a little bit of it, his mind became attracted, even though he wasn't attracted to the modes of material nature. That proves that Krishna's quality is transcendental. Those even who are attracted still to the modes of material nature, vikriditam bhagavaduvir aham cha vishnu, shadhanvitam nashinu yad atuvarna yedya, hridrogam ashu apavat avtanogatira. There's a verse from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which it says, those who are even afflicted by attraction to this material world, just by hearing the pastimes of the Lord, their disease of the heart will actually become cured, and they'll become attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and undisturbed. So in that context, let's look at in the songbook about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, because we're following in their footsteps. The six Goswamis were the direct disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they gave us the process for becoming elevated to the highest position of devotional service from any stage of life. And this is on page 21 of the songbook, Sri Sri Shad Goswami Ashtaka, 8 verses which are written by Srinivasacharya glorifying the Goswamis. He says, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are always engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna and dancing. They are just like the ocean of love of God, and they are popular with both the gentle and the ruffians, because they are not envious of anyone. Whatever they do, they are all pleasing to everyone, and they are fully blessed by Lord Chaitanya. Thus, they are engaged in missionary activities meant to deliver all the conditioned souls of the material universe. No, Hari Dev Prabhu, could you read number 2?
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who are very much enriched in understanding Lord Chaitanya and who are thus expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. They can purify all conditioned souls from reaction of their sinful activities by pouring upon them the transcendental songs about Govinda. As such, they are very expert in increasing the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss, and they are the saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of impersonal liberation.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who kicked off all association of aristocracy as insignificant. In order to deliver the poor conditioned souls, they accepted lion cloths, treating themselves as mendicants, but they were always merged in the ecstatic ocean of the gopis' love for Krishna, and they bathe always and repeatedly in the waves of that ocean.
So in these first few verses, we've heard about how the Goswamis were pleasing to everybody, for the gentle and the ruffians. Prahlad Maharaj mentions how those who are advanced souls, there are samak sarveshu bhuteshu, Krishna mentions this also, and how those persons who are equipoised don't have any enemies. Prahlad Maharaj recounts how he says, there are no enemies within the world except for my own uncontrolled mind and senses. Because the mind is what makes me think, oh, this person's my friend, this person's my enemy, based on my self-interest, which is not really my self-interest, it's the interest of my body. And therefore I think one person's my friend, one person's my enemy. But a person who has no interest in this world is able to treat everybody equally and not, or at least see everyone equally. Actually, the Madhyama Adhikari does make distinctions, but still sees that everyone's a spiritual soul and therefore has respect and love for each person in their own way. As an example, he may respect his spiritual master. But if he sees a tiger, he doesn't go and offer obeisances because he might, you know, but he still sees that Krishna is within the heart. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Ramani Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Shopake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. That pundit is the one who actually sees equally that Krishna is within everyone's heart and each living entity is within the heart of the different kinds of bodies. So such a person becomes attractive to even the ruffians. And then also it's mentioned how the Goswamis were expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures to establish eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Therefore, they're honored all over the three worlds. So this is one of the activities of those who are enlightened and on the proper path, is they take time every day to go deeply within the Shastra, to hear Bhagavad Gita, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, because then we're properly guided. And under the shelter of the Goswamis, they've presented these books like the Srimad Bhagavatam in such a way that we can also have Abhideya, which means practical practice of those acts of devotional service. In other words, you can hear about them and understand our relationship with Krishna through hearing Bhagavad Gita. We hear that I'm not my body, I'm actually a spirit soul. And then there's the activities of liberation. And those are also given by the Goswamis in the many books that they wrote for us so that we can follow in their footsteps and actually on a daily basis feel connected with Krishna. What are some of those things? Chanting Hare Krishna, what kind of ways of chanting Hare Krishna? Like what? Huh? Attentive chanting? And there's chanting like counting on beads, aesthetically pleasing every day. You can chant on your japa beads and you can feel some happiness. Chanting out loud, hearing, and this was something was inaugurated by Lord Chaitanya and also the six Goswamis. They showed this practice of how to count and regularly chant Hare Krishna. And what other ways? Association, yeah, definitely association with other devotees. The Goswamis used to gather together and hear and chant together and discuss the Shastras. And here, in one of these verses, he said they were expert in pouring these transcendental songs about Govinda. They can purify all conditioned souls from the reactions of their sinful activities by pouring upon them transcendental songs about Govinda. And so, this is one of the activities that the Goswami showed, how by immersing oneself in this transcendental song, by singing songs about Krishna, the heart becomes purified by that activity. So there are many regulated activities that are given to us by the Goswamis. We can follow those. And their own personal example, that they came from aristocracy, but they weren't attached to it. After meeting Lord Chaitanya, they wanted to give it all up and go away, and that's what they did. Tyaktva turna mashesha mandalapati shrenim sada tuchavat. They thought tuchavat means it's insignificant. Whatever they had, it didn't mean anything anymore to them. They were only attracted to Lord Chaitanya. And they wanted to run away, and that's what they did. They actually ran away from their duties as ministers to the king. Sanatan Goswami, after Rupa Goswami left, had hired some Brahmins to come, invited them to his home just to recite Srimad Bhagavatam, hear it constantly at his house. And he called in sick. And then the king came, and after some time, he said, "You're still sick?" So he sent the physician to see Sanatan Goswami. Physician came back and said, "He doesn't look sick to me." So the king came himself and said, "What are you doing? You're here hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. You're supposed to be running my kingdom." And Sanatan said, "Sorry, I can't do it anymore. I'm no longer interested in that. You know, run it yourself. I can't be involved." So he put him in jail. And he was able to escape because Rupa Goswami had left behind a boat full of gold coins. And hidden that actually kept it with a banker there, a grocer. And then Sanatan was able to finagle his way out of prison through some fast talking to the guard and also giving him some bribe. And finally he let him out. And what did he do? He went through the mountains, not on the regular road. He went through the mountains, very treacherous conditions, to get to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when he got there to Chandrasekharacharya's house, where Lord Chaitanya was staying, Mahaprabhu knew that he was outside. He was omniscient. He could understand that he had come. So he told Chandrasekhar, go out. There's a Vaishnava outside waiting out your door. Bring him inside. So Chandrasekhar looked outside the door. He saw a man very disheveled, and he had just come through the mountains. And he was also wearing Muslim clothes. So he looked out, and he came back to Mahaprabhu and said, there's no Vaishnav, my lord. There's a Muslim out there. He said, go look again. He looked again. He said, no, no. And he said, call him in here. And so he went out, and he said, you're a very fortunate person because Mahaprabhu's calling you in, and he wants to see you. So Sanatan came in, and Mahaprabhu embraced him. And then he told Chandrasekhar to go get him cleaned up. So he went and got shaved up, and he got him some cloth, and then he started his tenure under Mahaprabhu, serving them that way. And he was ordered by Mahaprabhu to go to Vrindavan, along with Rupa Goswami, and compile all of the Vedic literatures to show the path of Vaishnavism. So they did that. So we're on text number 5.
I offer my respectful obeisance unto six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanadana Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who are always engaged in intensity worshipping Sri Sri Radha Krishna, Radha and Krishna, in the transcendental land of Vrindavana, which is filled with a peacock and flocks of cooking swan, cuckoos, and cranes. In Vrindavana, there are also beautiful trees full with fruits and flowers and having roots inlaid with invaluable jewels, with the great delight of Goswami bestow upon the living entities the boon of the goal of life.
I offer my respectful obeisances onto six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who were engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord and bowing down in scheduled measurement. In this way, they utilized their valuable lives, and in executing these devotional activities, they conquered over eating and sleeping and were always meek and humble, enchanted by remembering the transcendental qualities of the Lord.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely the Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who were sometimes on the bank of the Radhakunda Lake, sometimes on the shores of the Yamuna, and sometimes in Vamshivata. At these places, they were appear just like madmen in the full ecstasy of love for Krishna, exhibiting different transcendental symptoms in their bodies, and they were merged in the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who chanted very loudly everywhere in Vrindavan, shouting, O Queen of Vrindavan, Radharani, O Lalita, O son of Nanda Maharaj, where are you all now? Are you just on the hill of Govardhana, or are you under the trees on the bank of the Yamuna? Where are you? These were their moods in executing Krishna consciousness.
Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed his disciples to write books on the science of Krishna consciousness, a task that those who follow him have continued to carry out down to the present day. Due to the unbreakable system of disciple succession, the elaboration and exposition on the philosophy taught by Lord Chaitanya are most voluminous, exacting, and consistent of any religious culture in the world. Yet Lord Chaitanya, who in his youth was widely renowned as a scholar, wrote only 8 verses himself, called the Shikshastaka. These supremely valuable verses clearly reveal his mission and percepts.
Thank you very much.